Good afternoon. You're listening to I Am The Valley right here on CIVL 101.7 FM broadcasting to the Fraser Valley, broadcasting from the University of the Fraser Valley's Abbotsford campus on the traditional and unceded territory of the Stolo people. I am your host, Sergi Atwal. I have a very special program for you, a roundtable discussion on the environment. Joining me for this discussion are Ron Dart, political science professor at the University of the Fraser Valley, John Vissers, an environmental activist in the Fraser Valley, Lynn Perrin, a social and environmental activist in the Fraser Valley, and Tim Tequera, professor emeritus from the Faculty of Science from Simon Fraser University. A well-known activist, we will be having a wide-ranging discussion on the environment. Thank you for joining us. I have a great privilege and pleasure to introduce a whole lot of guests with me today that will be joining me for a roundtable discussion on the environment. And I will introduce them and then we can get started. Professor Ron Dart, professor of political science at the University of the Fraser Valley. Audiences that listen to my show know him very well. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Oh, always good to be with you, Sujit.
And then we got John Vissers. Audience that have listened to this program on an ongoing basis know that John has been interviewed by this program multiple times. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Sergey.
Then we got Lynn Perrin, a local activist. Thank you, Lynn, for joining us once again.
Yeah, and I'm really eager to have an interaction of ideas and experiences with the other people in this discussion group.
Thank you. And then we got a new guest joining us today, professor, doctor, scientist, researcher, you name it, he's done it. Tim Tequero. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Thank you.
And I'll get the ball rolling and I'll ask each of you to say a few words on this question. As you know, the environment has been a very key issue recently, especially with climate change and what's been going on. And I recently had an interview with the mayor of Abbotsford where he says basically that it's up to council to get Abbotsford declared as an emergency on the environment. What do you think about that? Do you think Abbotsford or the Fraser Valley has done enough to take this climate change threat seriously? And we'll start with John Vissers.
Sure. Thank you. It's an important question, of course, because many cities and regions, municipalities are in fact signing on to the reality that we are in a climate crisis. And in fact, those regions understand that, you know, that allows us to act more quickly and decisively when extreme weather events occur and when the climate crisis in fact makes itself known in various different ways. So I was surprised when we did ask the city of Abbotsford about 2 or 3 years ago to sign on, and they rejected our delegation to council ask at that time. And I don't see them changing. According to Henry, he's told me I'm on a couple of different advisory committees with the city, and he's told me multiple times that the climate issue and environment is embedded in all of city policy. So we don't need to address it in any other way than just simply applying it to all of the different functions of city. So it's very convenient that they don't have to discuss it. Incidentally, I remember 10 years ago when we had our new official community plan, the word sustainability was on the cover, and it was used throughout the new official community plan. And sorry, that was like 12 or 13 years ago. And the most recent official community plan, that word has been removed. They just didn't like it. So it angered some of the developers. And so there you are.
And sir, what do you think, Ron, what do you think about this politically?
Well, I think, as you're probably aware, Abbotsford for many a year has been torn between the developers and their interests and their priorities and the environment. And when push comes to shove, inevitably what happens is the developers are given the green light and those interested in the environment are subordinated to those economic interests. And so what John has been mentioning, and I think anyone involved in even minimal ecological interests, much less substantive ones, are going to face the same indifference, opposition, rejection from the city that has been going on for really decades. Is particularly the central Upper Fraser Valley has this uncritical attachment to development and economic growth. And then, of course, they subordinate the environmental questions. And when that occurs, we become moral cripples, in a sense. And we think short-term and not long-term sustainability.
And I would love to hear your perspective, Tim, as a new guest, from all your research and all your activism. What do you think about this?
Yeah, thanks. I am very distraught, really, because Abbotsford got a big-time wake-up call in November. The impacts of climate change on human health are real. And five people died during the atmospheric rivers and the floods that hit Abbotsford. But 740 people died in the heat dome just in British Columbia. So if this is not enough for municipal leaders and other government leaders to say the climate emergency is here, this is a code red for humanity, we actually need to do something, not just set more targets that Canada doesn't meet. I don't know if the listeners know that Canada has never met a climate target it has set. So the time of dithering is over. And the UN Secretary General has been very clear that we are in a code red. That means we have to stop building new fossil energy infrastructure projects and pay attention to nature and protecting nature, because that is where our health comes from, our water, our air, our food, and shelter. So let's get real here.
Thank you. And Lynn, what do you think about this being a longtime activist?
Well, I remember, I guess I have some lived experience and I have some academic facts, you know, or science. Scientific facts to back my gut feeling on this. I moved away from Abbotsford for 8 years and returned in 2002. And I noticed an increase in how hot the summertime got compared to when I lived here, in 1994 compared to 2002. So that was sort of my first real flag that something is going on here. And then, you know, I've really followed council closely over the years. I've spent hours looking at council documents, council agendas, have attended numerous meetings, have been delegate to council, including the one meeting that John Vissers talked about a couple of years ago when a number of us came before council and actually had the nerve to demand that they declare a climate emergency. And that kind of got their backs up and they said that no one is going to make any demands on council. And so they used that as a pretty feeble excuse to not really acknowledge that, yes, we are in a climate emergency. So I look at some things in particular that are going on in our community and just beyond. And one of them is what's happening with watercourses. And for instance, there was a spill into Kilgard Creek from the Trans Mountain, current Trans Mountain pipeline in 2005. And it was so bad that the land around it, and it was wetland, cannot ever be remediated. It's too damaged. So they were supposed to go and do the remediation elsewhere. And it was supposed to be at McKay Creek at Sumas River. And so I've been really watching it. And finally, a couple of years ago, they put in the middle of summer into sand, a number of trees, didn't water them. So of course the trees all died. So that was Abbotsford and Trans Mountain trying to remediate the damage to the wetland uphill. And then a couple of years ago, a friend of mine asked me to take a drive with her. And we went around Abbotsford and looked at all the trees that are being cut, the big mature trees that give our community shade, keep it a bit cooler, but also our carbon sequester. And I'm just shocked. I'm just absolutely shocked at how many big trees are being permitted to be cut in this community. So those are kind of flags for me. And I absolutely do not think that Abbotsford is doing enough.
Thank you. And I would like to also get into another topic. As we know, Greta Thunberg, a young youth, got the youth involved worldwide and started making some ripples and some waves, and leaders around the world started taking that movement seriously. And we're talking about doing things differently for the environment. And then the pandemic hit, and that movement kind of fizzled away. Do you actually think movements like that, where they invite young people to be more active when it comes to the environment, are essential to get governments moving? Ron, what do you think about that, being a political science professor?
Well, there's always a tension in politics between the idealists of a Greta Thunberg and many others who stand for what should be done, given the situation we're living in. And then you have the hard realists who say, yes, that would be a wonderful idea, but. And so this is an ongoing clash in the environmental struggles. I mean, it goes back centuries. There's nothing new about this. The environmental issue, even though it's become pronounced and obvious, this story, this drama has been unfolding really since the 16th century forward. We're just living in the next scene of the act of an unfolding story. The implications of it are serious, bordering on the tragic, as we've witnessed within the last year. But the underlying clash between idealists and realists and somewhere in between is as old as the issue itself, whether it's ecological issues, economic issues, war and peace issues. So I think it's wonderful to have the people like the Greta Thunbergs, the Greenpeaces, the Sea Shepherds, Sierra Clubs, the, you know, Green Party and all of these. But it's such an ongoing struggle for them because they're facing the Goliaths as Davids. And the hope is, of course, the Davids will win, but often, sadly so, the Goliaths have the final word. But nonetheless, like Sisyphus, you keep doing what you can to push the stone up and it keeps seeming to roll back, but you keep doing it. And I think the heroic environmentalists continue to keep that prophetic voice loud and clear, absolutely necessary.
And John, being a local environmental activist, what do you think about young people joining him? Have you seen a difference in the last few years?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's the only thing that gives me hope anymore is hanging around young people, asking them what I can do to help. I'm just so astonished and grateful for this next generation and their courage. I think back to the peace movement. It's somewhat similar in a way. I think that the passion that young people bring to this issue is really going to make all the difference. I know that when I was engaged as a young person in environmental activism, maybe 30, 40 years ago, we had a lot of passion, but we didn't have a great deal of knowledge. And that's very different now. I'm seeing this next generation is so incredibly knowledgeable and so well-informed and articulate. And they combine that with their passion, and I think they're unstoppable. I have a great deal of hope that this is the generation that will, in fact, tip us in the right direction. I'm tired of the negative tipping points. I want to start talking more about positive tipping points. I'm done with the Malcolm Gladwell on his tipping points. I'm sick of it. I would much rather we talked about the positive tipping points that the young people are striving for. I'm on the board of directors with a few not-for-profit groups that do environmental work, habitat restoration and watersheds and so on. And it's just amazing to see people in their teens, 20s and 30s taking the leadership and doing incredible things. So I just show up and do the best I can to help.
We'll be right back after these messages on CIVL.